Blog Talk Radio.
We lay, my love and I, beneath the weeping willow. But now, alone I lie, and weep beside the tree, singing, O willow waily. The tree that weeps with me. singing, O Willow Whaley. Till my lover return to me.
Hello and welcome to Storyboard with Esther Combs, brought to you by A Team of Voices. A Team of Voices is a poetry group located on allpoetry.com, the largest poetry site in the world. And I always like to say thank you to Kevin and his crew for keeping the site up and running and getting us a place to share our poetry. Team of Voices is owned and operated by Deborah Lee. So if you want to join, you can knock on the door to the group. She'll let you in. We have different topics every night, different hosts. And we do poetry games, slams, talk shows, magic trick contests, and special events, and different types of themes. So thank you, Deborah Lee, for running the group and the blog talk page so we can geek out live. Team of Voices is sponsored by AP Taylor. Thank you very much for that. I am your host, Sky, and tonight on Storyboards, where we focus on fandom, story, comic books, D&D, all across the boards, we are celebrating the mini-series, The Haunting of Bly Manor, of course, based on the book, The Turn of the Screw. There were different versions of this novel. It's a short story by Henry James, and I've watched some British versions that were more true to the book. They were very good. This is really just like The Haunting of Hill House, which is part of this anthology series that they were doing. It is very different from the book, but I absolutely love the changes. And it was a great show. I will make a disclaimer. I have a heavy amount of clips today. I kind of went kind of crazy with my clips. So I do hope you enjoy them. But it was such a great story, and I really wanted to capture it. So there is that disclaimer. The opening song was by, we actually just listened to her last night, but she is Ashley Serena. You can find her on YouTube. She's an independent freelance musician based in Pacific Northwest of the United States. She began composing on the piano at age 7 and found her voice about age 16, landing a lead role in a local historic musical. Since then, she has trained with multiple vocal coaches, along with playing woodwind instruments, and that helped her gain proficiency on the silver flute, penny whistle, and several other instruments. And you can definitely, like I said last night, you could hear it within her music, even in her covers. Her covers are amazing. And then, of course, her originals, you could just hear that those beautiful layers of different types of instruments, and especially in this song, the O'Willy, I went back and forth on whether I was going to play the original, but this one was just so out of the park, creepy and spooky and just a little bit haunting, so it was perfect for tonight, and it is my favorite version, is hers, so I hope you guys enjoyed it. Without further ado, I'm going to invite on my first caller. Hello, Rack. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. Yeah, I heard you did some homework today.
A little bit. Just, you know, little background on the story, that's all.
Yeah, and what did you think?
It's kind of a recurring theme in a lot of the horror stuff, which is cool. You know, like you said, there's different versions of the same thing based on the same stuff. And, you know, sometimes the director's deviations are what makes it interesting. Sometimes it's what complicates the plot and makes it more confusing. So I like to see how other people flesh it out and where their minds go, because I know my mind is twisted and it's not on straight to begin with. So if somebody goes the same way, I'm like, oh, look, I'm not that weird. And then, you know, 2 minutes later, I'm like, yes, I am.
Well, you know, when it comes to novels, I'm many of the times a purist. You know, I want the novels to... I want the movie to be what the novel was, and I know that you can't always translate that into screen. But I, for some reason, there are those, like, these two series. I just, maybe because, see, I don't know, because I really liked Shirley Jackson. I really loved that book, but I just loved The Haunting of Hill House, what they did with it. And the same thing with this one. I wouldn't say that I loved this turn of the screw as much as I love reading Shirley Jackson novels. This is the only novel I've read by this author, where Shirley Jackson, I've read multiple of her short stories, and this author I have not, so I can't say I'm like, oh, I'm a big fan and all this, but I didn't mind that they changed it. I don't know. Did a good job. So... like I said, I have some clips tonight, and I'm going to kick it off right away, actually. And I know that you haven't dropped anything, but if you have a haunting poem or anything you really want to share that comes to mind, I know that you can really connect anything to anything. You're good at that. You're like, oh, you mentioned a light bulb. I have a poem about a light bulb. You could totally do that. Just let me know what it what it's called, and I will look up that for you, and we're just going to head right into it, because I'm just going to play the first clip, and then we'll get to some poetry. So here we go.
What a beautiful day. Wow, I'll never get tired of this place, I swear. What's the matter?
I'm very cross with you.
I'm frightened. Come see what I found.
You left your room last night, even though you promised you wouldn't.
Miss Clayton!
How do you know that?
You've got to stay in your room.
Come and see!
Why?
So she doesn't see you.
Who?
The lady.
What lady?
The lady in the lake.
Flora. Flora, look.
Miss Clayton.
Look! Look, I've been a teacher for 9 years, Miles. That's almost your whole life. In all that time, a lot of kids have tried to scare me in a lot of different ways. And you know what I learned? I'm a lot braver than people think. Including me.
I wasn't trying to scare you, Miss Clayton. I knew you wouldn't be frightened.
Did you?
Of course. I knew that about you right away.
Hmm. Is that something you used to do at school? Play pranks? Tricks?
I never quite saw the point of tricks.
Your uncle told me a little bit about your problems at school.
You spoke with my uncle?
Well, of course. He hired me.
Did he ask about it?
All he did was talk about you two. He misses you both. Very much.
No, he doesn't.
Of course he does.
Should we give him a ring and ask?
The Au Pair's heart ached for the boy's pain. But like the very weather it blies, moods proved quick to change. As sun, clouds, and rain would appear without hint or warning, so too did the children's moods, as though time and nature held secret laws just for them. The gardener did not even introduce herself to the new au pair. She barely acknowledged her at all, simply treated her as if she'd always been there. The others in the room just assumed they'd already met, which, if she were honest, was how the au pair felt when she first saw the young woman.
So who decided it was a good idea to feed these wee gremlins?
We're not gremlins. We're very good children.
Oh, is that right? See, I'm not so sure. I mean, what do you think?
Oh, it's hard to say. We're going to have to get water on them to be sure.
Hmm. Let
There you go.
Oh, was there somebody working on the grounds today? Maybe a repairman or something?
No, I don't believe so.
Because I saw a guy on the parapet on my way in.
On the parapet?
Yeah. Can't imagine.
Oh, I've not been up there.
Well, why would you? Are you sure you saw someone up there?
Absolutely. I waved. He didn't wave back.
Well, we do get ramblers sometimes. People that want to have a look at the gardens. They take liberties, but if 1 minute onto the parapet...
Oh, yeah, I can get up there anyway, not without going through the house.
Well, the only way up there is through the old wing. Mm. And where don't we go?
The old wing.
Oh, you must have imagined it, dear.
The housekeeper was no stranger to muddy footprints. A few times a year, it seemed, she started her days with a mop. Always the same path, from the door to the forbidden wing and back again.
You all right? Kids, when you're ragged.
Yeah.
Well, people really, all of them. Mm-hmm. So I prefer plants. Easy to get along with. And I find if I don't like one looks at me kind of funny, can always just, you know, come on. So if this child were even advice you're after, I'd just start there maybe. Not so bad, right?
Yeah.
I cry 3, maybe 4 times a day around here. 5, if I'm really being honest with myself. I also think I keep all these fucking plants watered. With my endless well of deep, inconsolable tears. That's how. That's what got me the job in the first place. Hope you're doing great. You're doing great.
Thank you.
Anytime. Right. Well, back to it then. Chin up, Poppins. Funeral starts at 4. I didn't say we should get there early.
Okay.
It's quite a dress.
Yeah, it's the only thing I had in black.
I hate it. It feels like a bit like you're trying to scandalize the village. Can't say I fault the general principle.
Yeah, I just don't want to let Owen down.
He won't mind. Honestly, you don't have to go if you don't want to.
Really?
He said as much. It's pretty clear.
Okay, yeah. That's a relief, actually. I had a funeral in my own life not so long ago. And I feel like this is,
Hey, Poppins. It's your day off. I promise. I don't need you to be my date to Owen's mum's funeral.
Okay. Okay. Then can you help me get this thing off?
Why me?
No, seriously. The zipper.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Is that a pincher?
No, I'm sorry.
All right. Well, I'll be back in a few hours. And if I find out you've not been relaxing, there will be serious consequences.
Okay.
Yeah.
The au pair found that she lit her candle not in remembrance of those that she lost, but to atone for the moments she didn't remember them. Those most recent moments where she had even been happy to have forgotten them. Her first look at Lai yielded no discomfort, no foreboding. It was exactly as Lord Wingrave had described. A great good place. And it yawned open to welcome her home. The night found the au pair restless. It was as Flora had said. The rooms were larger at night, as though the house itself had inhaled deeply as the sun disappeared, expanding as it held its breath for the morning. Her sense of expansion wasn't only indoors either. Gazing out, she found that the terrace and the whole place, the lawn and the garden beyond it, and all she could see of the park were empty with a great emptiness. An emptiness that called out to be explored.
Awesome. So obviously I had messed that up. I was supposed to play the clips the other way, and I by accident skipped it. So I just played it after, but it would have made a lot more sense if you had that little bit of intro and then went into the, you didn't stay in your room last night like we told you. So if you were a little confused when we first jumped into the first clip, it was because I forgot the actual first clip. So I hope you still got it anyway. So she's been hired. She's an American. She was hired in a British home to be an au pair. Which is like a live-in everything, right? They watch the kids, they teach the kids, they're just like their nanny, but also their teacher and basically everything else they need. And then you just saw a little bit of what's happening in interpersonal relationships that are going on and a little bit of personality. She's a little jumpy, obviously. There's something going on. I did not go into every storyline in this with my clips just so that you know. There is a spoiler alert because I will be revealing a lot of the plot line, but there are still lots of surprises that I don't have in here because going through all the subplots would have been too much. So I'm just going on the main storyline until like midway through, then we're going to get into what happened and why there is a haunting. So yeah, I hope you enjoyed the clip. And I hope, was it too confusing, Rack? I was thinking about cutting off. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, it wasn't confusing at all. It was just, you know,
okay.
This is how the day unfolds, this is how the day unfolds, and this is a typical couple of days. So, yeah. Life at the mansion.
I was like, I was about 2.5 minutes in the clip, and I'm like, ooh, I missed the other intro to that. And then I was like, should I press stop or should I just let it go and play it at the end? I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to, because I have to listen to it all over again. So I'm glad it worked out. I put down a poem, put down my own poem. So it's a spooky poem. I think you've heard it before. Yeah. let's see. So this is called Lake Carnival. Have you ever seen that show, Carnival?
That was a Broadway play, wasn't it?
Probably. I'm talking about it was like an HBO show. It's kind of spooky. This has nothing to do with it. I'm just curious. I got sidetracked. Yeah, it was a good show. All right, Lake Carnival by Sky Darkholme. There are curtains wept red on stage, bloodstone gems pooling on hickory strips, half-toothed grins and yellowing mouths that sip black crimson like craving thieves. The haunt of laughter can be heard beyond candled candy-striped tents, further still past bar ticket booths, abandoned costume concessions, the ringside corpses of featherless birds. Black tourmaline balloons grow darks and wings. A tremble of strings that dance to the soft hymns of violins. Notes are almost painted on backdrops of sea-shadowed clouds, tiny lit-up metal box prisons twirling like tombstones on frets, the notes of the spinning wheel of death. And what of the carousel, the ghost horseman seated gaunt? Can you hear his weeping echo? Aged copper and wintergreen moss, embroidered like charm bracelets of decay, pale opalite phantoms of star rubies, citrine sky mist and amber flecks, all waning on a music box stand like chewed safety nets of firelit lace. Within the carnival of the dead, the composition of red weeping curtains, of trembling strings and soft violin hymns can be heard beyond the veils of the living. One need only wind to the phantom carousel and listen to the ticks of tears, tiny lit-up metal box prisons twirling like tombstones on frets, the notes of a spinning wheel of death. End poem. There's some stuff for you.
There's a lot of celebration, you know, which is what I like, you know, in New Orleans in particular. But I hear Carnival, what I was thinking of was they celebrate that in Brazil, if I'm not mistaken. And that's like a huge deal with, you know, getting dressed up in parades and things. And it had that feel to it, almost like a celebration of death. And then you mentioned the flightless birds and things like that, which has that slumber tone to it. But it's still, you know, got the colorfulness. I love things like Dante and dual Lord.
Thank you, Rack. I wrote this a couple of years ago, and Becky, friend, I had read it, and I think I had written it in the years of COVID when we were all secluded. And I remember her saying, she was like, this kind of reminds me of what we're doing right now. Everything is empty and no one's anywhere. And I was like, oh, that's a really interesting way to take it. You know, I was thinking more spooky, but how she kind of phrased it with how everything's kind of was just empty and no places were full of people and that kind of sadness that was around that. And I was like, that's an interesting way to take it. And I could totally see that.
Yeah.
All right. So, okay, I got one poem down. Did you happen to Did you happen to think of anything that you wanted me to look up for you?
No, the past couple of days.
Yeah, I'm not going to ask you. Someone's asking me. I don't know how to do that. Okay, so Jenny the Deep is asking about blanket permission, but I'll gear her towards Deborah Lee. Actually, since I just read, do you want to plug your show for... Yeah, we could just, let's just plug shows real quick before we move on.
The topic board is up. It's going to be a monster bash. Bring your fiends and med scientists and, you know, anything that's going to give you goosebumps. It's going to be Halloween night.
All right. So on Halloween, we have trick-or-treating here, too, on Halloween. Yeah. But don't worry. It'll be over by the time your show is on. You're on at 10, right?
Yes.
Awesome. And then, all right, so that's the 31st is Raconteurs Monster Bash. And then going on from this week, I'm just going to plug all the shows in that way. I know Deb sometimes is a reader and a runner, so I'm just going to get ahead of the game and just kind of plug here. So the next show is tomorrow, and that is Sweet Discussions. She wants you to bring her your legends. And, of course, there are the standard stories we all love, the Headless Horseman, Bigfoot, Wolfman, vampires, banshees, and the many urban legends out of the world. Or tell us your own hauntings. Have fun. Let your muse guide you. And come on by to discuss your favorite legend with Sweet Pea on Sweet Discussions at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time tomorrow, October 19th. Everybody's getting into the spooky season. I just love it. Love it. On Friday, Liquid Damage is going live at 10 p.m. with open poetry. So that's usually pretty, well, there's not actually a lot on her topic board. That's usually pretty full because it's open poetry. She's going to be live. Yeah. On Saturday nights with Hatter, A.P. Taylor, and Deborah Lee, they are going live at 9, and the topic is Hello, Darkness, My Old Friend. You can go anywhere with that, really. That's going to be exciting. And then on Monday night, Picture Prompt, which I did not make it to that one yet. It's the 23rd on Monday night, and Deborah Lee goes live at 10 o'clock, and it's personal picture prompt. So she has lots of pictures up there by an artist named Stephen Mackey, and you could claim a picture. Each person gets their own picture. Write to the picture. She also has a word bank that's optional down on the bottom with lots of colors from her crayon box, of course. And those are pretty fun. Those are pretty packed, too. A lot of people reserve photos. That's really great art, really great artwork. I'm a big fan of picture prompts, so, yeah. I think I've only been writing to all my new poems, which are not that many. I have not been writing that much. But the only new poetry I have, I think, is for Deb's picture prompts. So there's that. And then that brings it back to me on Tuesday. Tuesday, we're going live at 8 o'clock, and I am doing shutter button poetry. You can bring any picture that you wrote to any of my Oktoberfest contests. Yes, Oktoberfest. I've been running it for 3 years, so there's plenty of prompts. If you have not, I think everybody that calls in and participates probably has entered one of my shutter button contests because I have like 630 of them. But my Oktoberfest, I committed to open a contest a day. So that's 31 poems in the month of October for the past I want to say 3 or 4 years. I may even go 4 years. It's been a while. Yeah. So, and I have contests running this month, so there's new ones as well. So you could enter one of those, or you could just pick a picture and write to it, and just not and just write a new one just for the fun of it. So that is on Tuesday at 8. And then that brings us around back to storyboards next Wednesday, and that's where I'm going to stop my last one. And next Wednesday, I actually don't even know what I'm doing next Wednesday. Oh, it's the last show of the month. I don't even know what I'm doing. It's actually D&D, so I'm really excited about this one. So I did this once before. I got a little busy last year, so I did not do it last year, but I did it the year before. And what I do is I look up spooky D&D character sheets, and some of them are just fun. Some of them are actual, monsters, and they're really cool. So you have to reserve a prompt. That is the only thing. So every person gets their own prompt and their own character sheet. You do not need to know the game to participate at all. So all you have to do is reserve a prompt. You read over the character sheet, and even though you're like, I don't know what these stats are, I don't know what's happening, why are we doing D&D, I don't know. But I do D&D every other month, so I think a lot of people are used to it. But if you're not, it's okay. All you need to do is take some information, any information that you read about it, and somehow put it in your poem. And your poem can be a short story. It could be a character, right? It could be you can simply use it as a metaphor. You could write a poem, and it can be hidden within the poem. Like, if someone read it, they're like, this isn't D&D. This is something highly emotional or spooky. But maybe you just used it as a metaphor. So there's so many things that you could do with this prompt. So I'm looking for the link, and it's the first one, and that's why I can't find it. Someone must have just wrote on it. So I think Jenny the Deep reserved, what was it, the Dream Eater. Steven reserved Corpse Eater. Deborah Lee, of course, picked the rot fly, so she's probably going to freak me out by bringing maggots because she knows how I hate them. Sweet Pea picked the crow mauler, and Wayne Jen. I'm so glad that someone picked the bog unicorn, because I'm just really excited for the bog unicorn. I don't know why, I just am. And then JCA just reserved the ooze hound, so it's going to be really interesting. That's next week on Wednesday at 8, so I hope you guys have fun with that. All right. So I am ready for another clip and then another poem. So I'm going to go ahead and play it. Again, they're in order of the show. So, just take into consideration what you heard before, and we'll keep going. Here we go.
You know, in the old days, the really old days, used to build giant bonfires at this time of year. Talk about the people they'd lost. Toss in offerings to drive away evil spirits. Old bones, mostly.
Well, I remember that. That's why they call it a bonfire, isn't it?
As I was saying, that's why it's called a bonfire. From the Old English, meaning bonfire. Build a pile of old bones and burn away the shadows. Because from here on in, the shadows get deeper. The nights get longer. We're heading into the dark and we have to hang on to each other. So we can only carry so much. So, has anyone got any old bones to throw?
The au pair was tired. She'd been tired for so long. Yet without even realizing she was doing it, she found herself taking her own advice that she'd given to Miles. She'd chosen someone to keep close to her that she could feel tired around. someone who might help her burn away the shadows.
There's not many secret spots, even on grounds this big. But this one, special.
Wow, that's beautiful. You planted that?
Yeah. It's a moonflower. Bloody hard to grow in England.
Yeah, but...
worth it. Is it?
Isn't it?
This plant only blooms 2 months a year, but only at night. Each bud only once. Your flowers will be dead by morning. And tomorrow night, new buds will bloom, and then they'll die. In 3 weeks, this entire plant will be dead. And in the spring, I'll have to plant a whole new moonflower.
That's a lot of work for a flower that only blooms once.
It's what people feel like to me. Exhaustive effort. Very little to show for it.
All of them?
All of them. Even you. Even me. Especially me. So, I figured I'd save you some effort. Skip to the end. Take a shot. Why not? Here goes, okay?
Okay. One was Louise. That was Dennis. Dennis met Louise and she was 18. He was 24. Total surprise. A year later, my brother, Denny. And me. Less a surprise, I guess. Dad starts working in a coal mine. More money. Slightly more. But he's barely home now. And Louise, well, Louise is home with the kids. She's basically a kid herself. Kid with two kids and a husband 600 metres down. So she does what kids do. She plays. So Dad's underground and Mum's under some bloke. And the thing about a coal mine... but the thing I think about most now I'm older. No plants down there. No life at all. See, these men, we send them down into this dark mess, digging for something dead. So dead that it's now lumps of dead things, so old and lifeless that they will literally burn. And that was her life. While she did whatever she could to feel alive. All that death, that dark, powdery death, is all over his face, his hands, his fucking lungs when he comes up. There's not a leaf, not a branch, not a flower in his world. And when he finally climbs out of that grave, finally climbs back to the land of the living, they laugh at him. They laugh because the whole town knows that the new baby, my little brother Mikey, isn't his. So Dennis buries his head in the soot and they praise him for his loyalty while they mock him for a cuckold. Louise, on the other hand, call a spade and they call him a mama whore. Call the daughter one too. Bully her at school, on the streets, even makes his way home. Little Denny piles on. Tries to save his own skin by blaming all the females in the family. And in 67, Louise bolts. She splits. And I come home from school to find Mikey. Alone. Screaming his little head off. He saw the baby. And he doesn't understand what he's done wrong. I try and take care of him. I'm just a kid. Can't raise kids. You forget things. I'm watching over a pot when it boils. One day there's an accident.
Social Services gets involved when we split up. Dad did his best. He spent so long with the grounds, he didn't know what to do with a kid, let alone three kids. So he disappeared into the dirt. Then it was foster care. Just a bunch of stale, perverted men with bitter wives, hoping to make a few quid by taking care of the local trash. I left for London pretty soon after that. Got myself into all sorts of trouble there. Wound up serving a couple of years. And as Sarah started gardening, busy work for idle hands. But I fucking love it. Love it. And it's so clear then how people aren't worth it. But plants. You pour your love and your effort and your nourishment into them. And you see where it goes. You watch them grow. And it all makes sense. So yeah. Everyone is exhausted. Even the best ones. Sometimes, once in a blue goddamn moon, I guess, someone like this moonflower just might be worth the effort. Look, I know you're struggling. I see it. I know you're carrying this guilt around. But I also know that you don't decide who lives and who doesn't. Sorry, Danny, but you don't. Humans are organic. It's a fact. We're meant to die. It's natural. It's beautiful. And it all breaks down and rises back up and breaks down again, and every living thing grows out of every dying thing. We leave more life behind us to take our place. That life refreshes and recycles, and on it goes. And that is so much better than that life getting crushed deep down in the dirt into a rock that will burn if it's old enough. So much better to see the leafling, the flower. We leave more life behind to take our place. Like this moonflower. To all its beauty lies, you know. The mortality of the thing.
The au pair could not remember the last time she'd slept this well. And she thought, perhaps she never had.
So a little bit of haunting, a little bit of romance. The show is really worth watching, even if you just listen to the clips here. It's nothing like actually watching it. It's okay, but definitely, definitely want to watch it. All right. I know, Rex. I know. See, well, yeah. You're laughing at me?
My no.
You know, that's why I put so many clips in Rapportoir, because I know that you can't watch it, so I just make sure that you can enjoy it vocally.
It's all for you. Oh, God. Okay, Damien. It's all for you.
Okay, I have a poem. It is a famous poet poem, because I'm just going to start to just read whatever. So this is Edgar Allan Poe, of course. It's spooky season, so you're going to bring a little bit of Poe. And this is The Haunted Palace by Edgar Allan Poe.
Just a Poe boy.
All right. In the greenest of our valleys, by good angels talented, once a fair and stately palace, radiant palace, reared its head in the monarch thought's dominion. It stood there, never seraph spread a pinion over fabric half so fair. Banners yellow, glorious, golden, on its roof did float and flow. This, all this, was in the olden time long ago. And every gentle air that dallied in that sweet day, along the ramparts plumed and pallid, a winged odor went away. Wanderers in that happy valley through two luminous windows saw spirits moving musically to the lute's well-tuned law. Round about a throne where sitting Porifogni, in state his glory well befitting, the ruler of the realm was seen. And all with pearl and ruby glowing was a fair palace door, through which came flowing and sparkling evermore. A troop of echoes whose sweet duty was but to sing, and voices of surprising beauty, the wit of wisdom of their king. But evil things in robes of sorrow assailed the monarch's high estate. Ah, let us mourn, for never morrow shall dawn upon him desolate. And round about his home the glory that blushed and bloomed in but dim remembered story of the old time entombed. And travelers now within that valley through the red-litten windows see vast forms that move fantastically to a discordant melody, while like a ghastly rapid over through the pale door, a hideous throng rush out forever and laugh but smile no more. I butchered in the middle, but I thought I did pretty well for the rest of it. So I butchered part of it, but I think it went pretty well. I love that one. I was thinking about, sorry, I'm like terrible at reading messages and talking at the same time. I'm just terrible at it. And sometimes I get messages throughout the show. I just love that one. And, I mean, Poe, it's just, his poetry is so theatrical. I mean, don't you think? You just want to, like, belt it out on stage.
That sounds, true.
Do you have a favorite Poe poem?
It's weird because I'm way more familiar with his stories than his poems. Like the Annabelle, it took me a while before I even realized Annabelle Lee was his. And things like that just kind of sneak up on me. But then when I make the connection, I start seeing everything. I mean, everybody loves the rape and everything, you know, the symbolism of that. Always resonates. So, you know, things like that.
I have this recording of someone who did Annabelle Lee on, they made it into a song. And they did it with Poe, too, with bells. And bells, the sledges of the bells. And the bells is such a mournful poem by Poe. But you hear it in this song, and it's kind of jingling and jangling. And they did a really good job. I really appreciated them, that take on it. And then there was a woman who did this one, and I don't know who her name is, but she was original, and she put music and sang Annabelle Lee. And a couple people have done it, and it's interesting. I wouldn't say it's my favorite as much as the Poe the Bells one was. I just thought the bells was done really well. But, yeah. By the sea, Annabelle Lee. I don't know why I just thought of Frank. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's because the way that he reads, I just thought of Frank.
Go
ahead.
There was another one of Poe's poems that he wanted to read also, that he's kind of infamous for reading around this time. Well, around any time because he likes Poe, so that's why you thought of Frank, because, you know, he wants to affiliate himself with Poe.
Yeah. I don't know. I reread his entire work, not this year, last year, I reread all his work. My friend had gotten me a book years ago, a full, the entire works. I think she got it from Barnes & Noble, and I had read it in my mid-20s, so I had read the whole thing. And I grew up reading him, but I read the whole book in my mid-20s. And then I wanted to go through the book again, but this time I ended up reading the poetry from the book, like, on the page, which was, like, half the book, and then seeing what I can listen to on YouTube for people that do the stories. So it was kind of cool. I did it a little bit differently. I listened to the stories, and then I read the poetry in print, and I spent the year kind of reading it. And then I got a book that I'm still working on, actually. It's like 800 pages of Emily Dickinson as she preserved them, her entire works as she preserved them. And I've been reading it for about 2 years now. And if I just sat there and I just flip page by page by page, I would probably be done by now. But it's just something that sits next to my desk. And it's 800 pages. I think it's almost 900, because 800 and something pages. And I think I only have I'm right near the end, like right. Well, not really, actually. I'm probably like 600 and something. That's a lot. But I don't like to read it. I just like to enjoy it. So I'll just do a few poems.
Yeah.
So
every once in a while you get that sweet tooth, and you want to, have that moment and, enjoy it.
Yeah. And the thing, I just love Emily Dickinson. Just absolutely love her. So I'm going to play my next clip. It is by far my longest clip, so get your popcorn.
Okay.
And get some water, get a glass of wine or whatever you want to do, and enjoy this clip. And just so that I explain this clip, we're obviously going through this. The house is a little bit haunted. There's stuff going on. There's mud being tracked into the house. They can't figure out why. The kids are acting really weird. We don't understand why. The au pair is obviously haunted for other reasons too, and something weird is happening. This next clip, if I remember correctly, which I think I do, actually I did the clips a while ago, but I believe it's the right one. Hopefully it is. It is the backstory of the house and the sisters that live there, and why it's actually haunted. I believe this is the right clip. If it's not, I'm just getting you ready for a later clip, but I believe this is the right one. So it won't be the same characters as you've been listening to. It's going to be different characters because we're going into the past. So here we go.
Toward the middle of the 17th century, there lived in the province of Hampshire a widowed gentleman. His name is of little account. I shall take the liberty of calling him Mr. Willoughby, a name like his own of a highly respectable sound. He'd been left a widow after some 6 years of marriage and had devoted himself to the care of his progeny, two daughters born at an interval of 5 years apart, the elder Viola, the younger Perdita, in memory of a little girl born between them who had lived but a few weeks. With their father in the ground, they faced a dire necessity for marriage. For both maidens, neither a male, stood to lose control over Mr. Willoughby's economic affairs and of the manor in Bligh, their lifelong home. Were at this time in all the freshness of their youthful bloom. Perdita in her sweetness, Viola in her wit, and Viola, of course, in the finest of dresses, always. Among the young men, their friends and neighbours, there were many excellent fellows, several devoted swains, and some two or three who enjoyed the reputation of universal charmers, or conquerors. But Viola knew them for what they were. Gluttons, opportunists, vultures. Vultures poised to pick the carcass of their father, to pillage his wealth via his daughters. No, Guy must stay in the family, and the sisters must stay in control, lest everything be lost to the same grave. Thus led to Viola's invitation to a distant cousin, one Mr. Arthur Lloyd. The wedding was a small affair, fitting the business arrangement that it was. A fine outcome for Viola, who had meant to maintain her ladyship over Bligh.
I have no honeyed words to speak. It is fierce up there.
But you are fierce, huh?
Bligh belongs to you, and they will try to take it from you as they did me. But I will not let them. Instead, we shall move mountains, my girl. It is you. It is me. It is us.
Those were the rosy times after Isabel was born. But nothing holds, and all things change given time. Change does not often announce itself. It does not trumpet its arrival. No, change is emergent. By the time one realizes it has arrived, it has already set its teeth. And all things exhausted, their vicar came again to Bligh, but to perform a rite far more melancholy than the rosy song of matrimony he sung before.
I go and prepare a place for you. And I will come again, and will take you to myself, so that where I am, there you may also be. Sister, you must repeat the rite. Say the words after me. I go and prepare a place for you.
No, I do not go. Tell your God that I do not go.
Some in the village would say that death had come for Viola. Nightly, in fact, those first few years. A dark carriage led by a red-eyed horse, denied at the door of Bligh Manor. That dark carriage and its driver denied so often, in fact, that it would not venture to Bligh Manor again.
I will not be buried in my rings or my dresses. My rings and my lace and my silk. I can say without vanity now that I am done with them. They will be a great inheritance for our daughter. So you will keep them and watch them for her till she grows into them and shrouded, covered in rose petals, keeping their colors in the sweet scented darkness. Do you promise me, Arthur?
Promise you what?
Promise me that you will keep them for her. That you will keep the key. And you will never give it to anyone except our child. Promise me.
I promise you.
The money failing, as time went on, Arthur was required more and more to business. Further and further across the oceans to places exotic and rich. With Arthur gone, all pretense was put aside. Perhaps it was the hour, perhaps the fact that everything in this world has that point beyond which it can bear no more weight. But that night, as Perdita beheld her sister, a thought occurred to her. The word had come to her a full year prior. Like the tickle in Viola's lung, he had grown in the secret places. The word had eclipsed her thoughts at night and waken as well. The word began in her chest as the sickness did for Viola. It had spread, insistent, a whisper in her ear, in her mind entire. And now the word crept down her shoulder and her elbow until the word came to live in her hand. The word was mercy. And the word was a lie. Because it wasn't mercy on her mind or her heart as she moved her hand. It was every slap, every insult, and every day that had passed, every moment after the last rites. It was a different word that had infected her all this time. The word was not mercy, she realized in the end. No, the word had always been enough. They were married, as was becoming, with great privacy, almost with secrecy, in the hopes, as was waggishly remarked at the time, that perhaps the late Viola may not hear of it. And on their wedding night, as Perdita took residence in the bed which had been her sister's, each party obtained what each had desired. For Arthur, a beautiful woman, somewhat known to him already by virtue of her lineage. But Perdita's desires, as you will have observed, remained a good deal of a mystery. Arthur, on his side, suffered heavy losses of money. This latter circumstance compelled a material retrenchment in his expenditure. And Perdita was perforce less of a great lady than her sister had been. She had long since ascertained that her sister's immense wardrobe had been sequestered for the benefit of her daughter, and that it lay languishing in thankless gloom in a dusty attic. It was a revolting thought that these exquisite fabrics should await the commands of a little girl, and thus, on the sixth anniversary of Viola's death, Perdita had reached her limit.
Perdita?
She would wake. She would walk. And time went by. How much time, it was impossible to reason. Sleeping. Waking. Walking. Sleeping. Waking. Walking. And in time, as we all do, she admitted all. She admitted she was dead. She admitted her husband had moved on. She admitted her daughter was growing without her. And she admitted her room was a dream, a construct, a lie preferred to the truth of the trunk. What there waited for her at the end of this purgatory? A reward in the knowledge that one day the door would open. One day the locks would see their keys. And one day Isabel would open her mother's trunk and claim her reward. Both of their rewards. And day after day, night after night, an ocean of time, the moment finally came. Husband. She saw not the changes wrought of time, only his sadness, Only that. And so, overwhelmed, she slept and waited. They buried Lady Perdita and set about forging a new life. The business was empty. The manor was lost. If not in law, in spirit. They would move away from here, sell the manor and find a quieter life, a smaller one, made only for the two of them. The two of them and also Viola. At last, at least, she'd be with them both. Her husband, her daughter. No matter, they couldn't see her, couldn't touch her, couldn't hear her. No matter. She'd be with them. And that was all that mattered. They were leaving Bligh, leaving most of what remained of their belongings. Her reward for all these years of isolation, for all the ache in her tired heart. But Arthur had grown a superstitious man and had seen the horror on Perdita's lifeless face. His superstition defied reason, but he felt confident all the same. Whatever curse had claimed his second wife, he would not risk his daughter to its icy fingers. His daughter, nor anyone else. This final insult of being cast to the swampy depths while her daughter would grow to womanhood. This absolute abandonment shattered Viola's heart. The feeling of being pulled towards some other place, some realm beyond, had faded in the years since her death. But now, she rejected it outright, with every ounce of her considerable will, as when she was sick, and against all probability, Viola would not go. The eldest of Willoughby's daughters, once Lady Lloyd of Bligh, remained, some would whisper, by stubbornness alone. The pull of that next world ignored, she instead made her own gravity. Gravity of will that would change the terrain of Bligh Manor forever, and once again she would sleep. She would wake. As if woken from a nightmare, she would walk back to her home, feeling each time that it was a dream. Feeling that if she walked to her bedroom, to the room she once shared with her husband, her infant daughter, that perhaps the nightmare would abate, that she could simply slip into the warmth of blankets and nestle herself to the bosom of her family, waiting for her all this time. And she'd stare at that empty bed, and Viola would remember. And the remembering itself was injury anew. She would sleep, and as happens when one dreams, she would forget. and haven't forgotten she would wake. She would walk. She would sleep. Forget. And forget. And forget. And with the forgetting, an ailment altogether monstrous. All things fade. All things. Flesh, stone, even stars themselves. Time takes all things. 'Tis the way of the world. The past recedes. Memories fade. And so, true does the spirit. Everything yields to time. Even the soul. Wake. Walk. Forget even more. Her name. Forgotten. Her sister's name. Forgotten. As her memories left her, so too her face. So little did she remember that one night she found a child in her daughter's old bed and could not remember who she had been hoping to see. She had only the faint notion that she'd walked this far, hoping to find a child, and here was her child. It must be the child whom she'd sought. Must. She would sleep. And she would fade, and fade, and fade. And the others, too. Those souls held in orbit. Those unfortunates trapped in the gravity well she had made of Bly Manor. They were fading as well.
I think my favorite part of the show is the storytelling voiceover. There isn't, the whole show isn't like that. Obviously, the clips that I chose weren't just the story, well, mostly the storytelling parts, because I just think they were done so well, and it's like listening to an audiobook, really. I mean, when she's telling the story, it's like poetry, the way she's describing it, and I think that was one of my favorite parts about the series was the voiceover storytelling. And then obviously while she's telling that story, you're seeing all the scenes that go with it. So still definitely, if you haven't seen it, definitely watch it. But even if you're listening to it, you still understand. And then visually you get to see, you know, her walking and what's happening a little bit more. And then obviously I cut out some parts, cut out a lot of parts in that section. But, yeah, awesome. What do you think about the story? I mean, Rock might have fell asleep.
No, I was muted. I was muted.
Oh my gosh. Don't tell me I put Rack to sleep.
No.
What a wonderful haunting story to fall asleep to, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the goings on in the house seem to be between that and the interpersonal relationships. Yeah, I could see this.
So this was, again, part of the anthology, and the first one was The Haunting of Hill House. I have to say, personally, I thought The Haunting of Hill House, that installment, was scary. Like, it was scary. Like, it freaked me out. It would give me nightmares. It had jump scares. It was scary. I felt like this one was haunting, but also very sad. Like, it was just very – I felt more sad than scared.
Yeah.
But it was – Throughout the whole series, I was like, "Oh, that's sad," but that is another way of that's another haunting way. That's another way to be haunted, right? Which leads me to my next poem that I'm going to feature tonight. And oh no. Okay. Well, I had the link. I had the link, but something happened.
You went in the clip.
I know. It, all poetry was like, this doesn't exist here. I'm like, yeah, it does. I just was on it. Okay, so let's see. Okay, so since we were talking about Emily Dickinson, and since I was talking about how there can be different ways that people are haunted, even in sad ways, I thought this poem was appropriate. And I mean, I feel like many people know this poem. So when I start reading it, you're going to be like, even if they don't know the whole poem, they're going to say, oh, I know that line. So this is, well,
I did not stop
at
death.
No, not that one. Although I do love that one. This is about a haunting, but I'm not going to say the title because she didn't title her poems, and I feel like it's an injustice to title her poems when she didn't title them. So I'm just going to say this is by Emily Dickinson. One need not be a chamber to be haunted. One not need be a house. The brain has corridors surpassing material place, far safer of a midnight meeting, external ghosts. That interior confronting, that cooler host. Far safer through an abbey gallop, the stones a chase, than unarmed ones a self-encounter in lonesome place. Our self behind our self concealed should startle most, assassin hid in our apartments, be horrors least. The body borrows a revolver, he bolts the door, or looking a superior specter or more. End poem. And I truly feel like many people know one not needs to be a chamber to be haunted. That line, I mean, and maybe not everybody, but I feel like it's a pretty well-known line. At least, yeah. And compared to her other works, when you say, oh, do you know Emily Dickinson? If most people that say, oh, yeah, I do, it's that one, or, yeah, I did not stop, I did not stop for death, and so he stopped for me. That one, too.
Yeah.
But I think there's poets and poems that people come to mind.
If I remember the title, I would. I have a poem that I wrote to that quote. Not too long ago.
Okay, if you remember the title.
Yeah.
So, I like... Go ahead. I'm sorry, Rick.
No. It's I'm reminiscing about my own minutia. That's cool.
Well, reminisce.
Like
go ahead.
No. I'm trying to remember the damn title because it wasn't that long ago, and you know, connecting it that quote came to mind. Because that's very the haunting thoughts of feel over. But anyway, don't let me derail the show because I'll be sitting here stuttering for the rest.
No, definitely not. I love conversation. I like the line because it brings forth the metaphor of haunting, meaning you don't need to be a house. You can be a soul that's haunted as well by things of the past. And I think, I don't know, I just love that idea and how that went. So Deb did drop a poem. She's not going to be able to crawl, but Deb really loves to read to me. So I appreciate the poem, but I would like to save it only because I know that Deb is very much, I don't even like to pre-read her poem. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put it on to, I'm going to put it on my shutter button because I'm going to put it on my shutter button show. So in case, Deb, you're listening or you listen later, I'm not going to put it on a D&D one because I have a lot of poems there. So I'm going to put it on the shutter button and you could read it next week to me. And we do have a poem that I need to read for Sweet Pea that she dropped. So we're going to do that as well. But I think I'm going to play, I have two clips left for the whole night, so I'm going to play one more clip. I really like doing the clip poem. I think it separates them well. So, let's see, here we go. So I'm going to play my next clip, which is shorter. That was the longest one, and that was because I didn't want to cut the backstory. It was so good. I didn't want to cut it into sections. I wanted it to be all together. And I just love the backstory. I just loved how she told the story in the show, the voiceover. So here is, so now we know the au pair is caught in the grips of the Lady of the Lake, a.k.a. the eldest sister of the Bly Manor that was murdered by her sister and that in her death murdered her sister. And then her husband, you know, there, even though physically her body wasn't in the trunk with her dresses, her soul was trapped there. So the trunk was essentially a room. You couldn't see that visually, but the trunk became a room that she kind of paced, and she was locked in. She was locked in one room, and it was actually, she realized, the trunk. And then her sister opened it because she was going to sell the silks, and then she ended up murdering her sister. Her husband got a little, you know, he got suspicious, so he put the trunk in the lake. And so she was forever drowned. Her soul was drowned in the lake. And now she gets out of the lake and she walks the house. And anybody who's within that path, when she walks, she pretty much just grabs and drowns. And then anybody who dies in the manor still stays in that orbit they were talking about. So there's just a bunch of dead people walking around. And I will mention, I won't say who it is, but there are people in the show that you don't know are dead till the end. And I'm like, wait a minute, they were dead the whole time? And then you have to rewatch it because there are little signs throughout the series that you're like, oh, yeah, that person did that. Oh, I get it.
The one on the parapet.
Yes. So it was the one on the parapet, yes. One of them was on the parapet. And then one of the people that is one of the main characters that you think that are alive the whole time, they were actually dead. And then there was stuff going on with the kids, and you're not quite sure, but then you realize that they're being possessed by two of the ghosts. They're being possessed by them. So the kids aren't even the kids sometimes. They're other people. You just don't know it. And then when you start to look at their language and you go back, you're like, oh, I get it now. And it's like it all comes together in the end, and you have like this urge, well, at least I did, to rewatch it in a different perspective, and I thought that was really cool. So that's where we are in the storytelling. She's got the au pair, so we're gonna see what happens in this. So see.
Dennis! Owen tried to breathe life into Henry, who hovered between life and death. Soon, Flora would find herself dream-hopping endlessly at Bly. And it would have all gone that way had not the au pair, in that critical moment, said what she said. Something she did not entirely understand, but something she felt in her bones. She had to try.
It's you! It's me! It's us!
The au pair invited Viola into herself, and the invitation had been accepted. In that instant, the spell that Viola had cast over Bly was broken.
Flora!
Uncle Henry!
And all of the spirits trapped in her gravity were released.
Uncle Henry!
Miles! Oh, I'm so sorry, kids. I'm so very sorry.
After the housekeeper's body was taken from the well, someone in the village said that the cook rode with her all the way to the coroner. And there, he insisted on cleaning her himself, which he managed with a soft towel, soap scented with lavender, and the greatest of care. He stayed at her side until she was buried, and he loved her the whole way. I'm told, and I believe, that he loves her still.
You're about done up here.
I got distracted.
It's all right. I'll help you.
Of her. It's in here, isn't it? Peaceful. It's quiet, but it is peaceful. It's rage. And I have this feeling like I'm walking through this dense, overgrown jungle. And I can't really see anything except the path in front of me. But I know there's this thing hidden. This angry, empty, lonely beast. It's watching me. Matching my movements. Just out of sight. But I can feel it. I know it's there. It's waiting. She's waiting. At some point, she's gonna take me.
Yeah.
venom in the flower?
Yeah.
They're really rare, you know.
I've got a problem. Or rather, we've got a problem, Poppins. You see, I'm not sick of you. At all. I'm actually pretty in love with you, it turns out.
1 year became two. And from two, it spread into an endless time. So it seemed. 3, 4, 5 years would pass. And there was peace.
25,000 dollars.
At long last, deep within the au pair's heart, there was peace. And that peace held for years, which is more than some of us ever get to.
Well, from there then, found it on the street. I wanted to save it. Get in then.
Want me to keep stirring?
Yeah, see if you can salvage it. Well, there's your problem. Your root. Danny, why is there...
Here's the thing. You're my best friend. And I love my life. And I don't know how much time we have left. But however much it is, I want to spend it with you. And I know we can't technically get married, but I also don't really care. We can wear the rings and we'll know. Okay? And that's enough for me. If it's enough for you,
then I reckon that's enough for me.
Awesome. And then we do still have the conclusion. So we do have, let's see, we have Hatter. Hello, Hatter.
Unmuted. Yeah.
Unmuted. Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Oh, had a sort of a rough day, but I'm getting better.
Oh, good. Well, that's because you called here. That's why it's going to get better. Going to get even better in the next 20 minutes. I am sorry you had a bad day, though. I'm glad it's looking up. We are hanging out here, Brack and I. Brack's on the line, of course. And we are... Unmute, Brack. I don't know. I've had this feeling Rack was going to fall asleep. I don't know why. He seemed a little tired. So I had this feeling. I think he may be falling asleep. It's okay. We have 20 minutes left. So I have a poem from Sweet Pea that I have up. And I know I have a poem from you that you brought. Do you still want the poem that you dropped the other week? Do you want that one or a different one?
It was yesterday, the other week.
Was it yesterday? No, it was the other week. It wasn't yesterday. It was the other week. It was the one he brought to the Haunting of Hill House, and then I said we may have time to week two, but I'm not sure. What's the Haunting of Hill House? It would be something I would maybe forget that yesterday just happened. Definitely in my wheelhouse of maybe, but I do remember it from last week. So do you still want that one, Hatter, or would you like a different one?
No, we'll go with that one.
Okay. So I'm going to, do you have a moment for me to, how long are you staying with us for the rest of the show, or are you just calling and leaving? Yeah. What are you doing?
No, I think I could make 20 minutes and support.
Okay. So I'm going to, well, it was a heavy clip night, so it was okay that I didn't have many callers today, actually, because it was so hard to figure out what I wanted to present here for the clips, and it is a really, like, Rack and I haven't barely even talked all night. We talked a lot, like, the first 36 minutes, and then that was about it, but, all right, so this is Sweet Pea. She dropped it to, what did she drop it to? I need to get over here. She dropped it to the quote, no, there are depths. The more I go over it, the more I see it, and the more I see it, the more I fear. I don't know what to see, what I don't fear. So, and that was from the book, The Turn of the Screw. So she picked that quote, and this is the poem that she has for it. This is called Roses and Sad Songs by Sweet Pea. She lay in a bed of roses, and not a thorn pricked her skin. A sweet aroma wafts above, as bypassers stop and grin. Crusty lady sarcasm pours down from jealous lips while she chokes on nightshade, crawling down her throat and eating all her sins. Listen to the melodies of Prince Charming's foolish yawn, crooning love's authentic sound, a throat burning with white smoky lies, melting in the monochrome colors of a drunken piano haze, plating chords of a bluesy Billie Holiday's sad melodic songs. The pretty mirror on the wall shows the world a tarnished crown. Beads of crimson red drip from ivory toes from glass slipper shards that ripped open delicate skin as a dying shroud pretending to spin and dance in a world gone mad. Gone mad had her wrong. End poem. And it's just gone mad had her wrong. But I paused at an inopportune time, so I had to reread it a little bit. This is awesome. I love the one that you chose. The thing I love about doing these kinds of shows when any show, not these kinds of shows. So the things I love about when I do storyboards is that the themes are so open to interpretations, and this is a haunting theme, obviously. And the twists and turns, I think, too. And the way that she changed it into this relationship where this ideal of Prince Charming, happily ever after, that mirror view that, you know, like Pink's old song, if you got to go way back, Family Portrait, right? This pristine picket fence of a view is just not real. And it is pretend, and it is fake, and it is plastic. And when you see through the cracks, you start to see that this relationship and this person is quite broken. You see it through, well, first of all, I love the mention of the nightshade crawling. And somebody was sending me all these deadly plants and foods today that I found very cool, by the way. I did find those rack really, really cool. I did actually look at something you sent me. I know sometimes I'm really bad at that. I'm really bad at clicking links and because then I'm like doing something and then I push it off and I was well behaved today. So I did do that. So I do love that you brought in the nightshade. And then this thing right here, crooning love's authentic sound, a throat burning with white smoky lies. And then you bring in the monochrome colors, which I really love that. And then you brought in the drink, you know, the drunken piano haze, this stupor, perhaps an addiction, you know, whichever it may be. But just this person that is, you know, playing these sad songs and, you know, not really giving of themselves. And again, the pretty mirror on the wall, I loved that reference. As a I know Sweet Pea knows that I love Grimm's fairy tale. So, and she's, a lot of her poetry, you know, pokes fun with those things too and leads into those things. So I'm sure that she picked this one for many of those reasons. But I really love that part. And, I mean, I'm sure... I don't want to say anything about the last line because Hatter might have something to say. I don't want to ruin it for him. I don't want to take his thunder. So I will save that for him. But I really enjoyed the whole poem, and it was really well done. And it's funny how sarcasm pours from jealous lips. It is funny how spiteful. I wouldn't say funny. That's not really the right word. But it is something. I'm not sure what the word I'm looking for right now is. But it's harsh, I guess. That's what I want to say. Harsh. And it's so harsh what sarcasm can do to relationships, and detrimental when it comes to, you know, passive aggression, being passive aggressive and letting that build up and then come out in small spaces instead of communicating. So really well done. Bracken Tor, what do you think?
I love her word choices and the way that she weaves the story in general. And you're right about the sarcasm. There's a thing about it. It reminds me of, you know, it's very Southern to me, that whole, well, bless her heart, you know, that whole idea of, you know, kill them with kindness. And you half the time it goes over their heads, and like an hour later they're like, wait a minute. Did I just get insulted? I love things like that, and you know that I think is one of the things that come out with sarcasm, you know, because a lot of times it goes unnoticed, at least until later on when the person has a minute to think about it. It's like, you know, I was insulting me, or sometimes you even have to tell them. But the overall, you know, her view. There's a song by a band called The Smithereens called Blood and Roses, that you know, the idea of something so beautiful that can be so painful. It's just, you know, she embodies that in her words all the time when she talks about, you know, being hurt and giving and trying to do, you know, the right thing, or, you know, be there in the moment and then, you know, getting kicked in the teeth for it. And you know this is just, you know, very, very poignant and beautiful, as sad as it is. If an autopsy could be beautiful, sweet.
excellent comment. Thank you, Rat.
Yeah, and of course she's got the Hatter in there too in the end.
Oh, you're supposed to say that for Hatter. Oh, I held my tongue. You. All right, Hatter. I gave him a scolding.
Okay, is a Hatter wrong bad, or is it a tragic thing to spin and dance in a world gone mad Hatter wrong? Huh. Yeah. And also,
maybe you couldn't sing mad without saying Hatter wrong.
That muted trumpet, bluesy.
Yeah.
In the
background. Some Billy.
Yeah. She draws you in and then blames it on me. Thank you,
sweet. That's quite what you meant. Excellent comment. Thank you, Hatter. Thank you so much, sweet. And we are going to move right along here, Hatter, because I've got like 12 minutes left. So, I mean, time goes by when you're in fun. I have one more clip, and I have your poem. So we're going to do your poem. I'm going to say my thank yous, and then I'm going to outro with the clip and the ending music. Right. I'm going to do a little different today. So you're up next. You can go ahead and read.
Okay, this is it, huh? Okay. This is a... Quickie, a band that played for the very last time, Ghost Story. This is a true story of events. The night the band played for the very last time, Mickey thought he'd lost his mind. Our drummer left to never return. This is what Mickey learned. My house was haunted by a clever ghost. The things she said, she did, I loved the most. Slamming doors and looking locking them so I couldn't get in. Sorry, my eyes are bad. touching hair and silent reds, freaking all just because finding ice, cold beers at night, LaPhil was next to feel the fright. RTD refuses to see the ghost that played in the key of E, a story told in poetic rhyme, and the band that played for the very last time. Yeah, the night freaked by the band members, they never came back.
Oh my gosh. What is RTD?
Rick the Dick. That's what he went by. He was our lead guitarist.
Oh, okay. Okay, so it's the initials of a person. Okay, that's what I thought, but I wasn't sure. Okay, so she cleared that up. This is cool, and I love how you, you know, intro. And is that one of your drawings?
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Yeah, I love that, Hatter. Absolutely love it. Those eyes and the eyebrow, like the lack of an eyebrow, but the stern thing is just really freaky. I thought this was great, and I love how you're like, this is a true story, and this is kind of go. Obviously, some kind of, you know, my house was haunted by a clever ghost. The thing she did, I love the most. I thought that was, it was clever in the slamming doors, and I think most of us have those stories that were like, something wasn't right there. Something just was not right here. And I love that you shared that with us, and then it kind of thinks that the band broke up, obviously. But yeah, but it's those little things, like, how did this beer get here? What happened? How did this light get left on? I have a problem with flooding. My car's flooded. Like, one time, no joke, the back seat of my car was flooded, inches of water, only in the back seat of my car. And it didn't rain that much, but, like, nothing else was wet. It was really weird. And then one time, my bathroom, that was only my bathroom, was flooded, got flooded out as well. Like, I have a thing with water. Like, I don't know what it is, but it's weird, and it always seems to happen to me, and it's unexplainable, and it happens throughout a series of events in my life, just weird happenstance. So it's just really weird how those things happen, and there's really no explanation for it, and you're like, what, why did this even happen? And
well, your backyard is right by the bridge, right? Your backyard?
No, I'm talking about even before I lived here. This is like years of my life that things have been flooded, and I'm not really sure how it got. Like, it wasn't, it was just weird. Like, it was just really weird. There was no pipe burst in my bathroom.
What's your sign?
I'm a water sign. So, yeah, and when I was younger, too, when I was growing up as a young girl and as a teenager, I used to always say, I'm going to drown. When I die, I'm going to drown. Even if it's I slip in the tub and I drown in 2 inches of water, I know that I'm going to drown when I die. Like, I was set. I was convinced. So it was kind of weird that stuff kept happening. I don't know why. I mean, and I wasn't even the one that noticed it. It was my roommate, my best friend of 24 years. She's like, do you notice that things just flood around you for no reason? There's just water in places
little,
where there shouldn't
black,
be.
Does a little black cloud follow you around?
I get a lot of rainbows, actually. I see a lot of rainbows. I don't know if it's because I notice them because I'm overly observant of them, but
that's
I happen,
one.
Like,
that's
when
one.
I take pictures. Huh?
Oh, that's water. That's the sky saturated with water.
That is. It's the breaking apart of the light refractions. Yeah, so, but I do. And you can tell because I just have pictures of random rainbows everywhere. Like, even one on my door. Like, it was just the way that the light came in from the window. I don't know if it's because I'm overly observant of rainbows or because they just follow me around and stalk me. But I have a lot of pictures of rainbows. But, yeah, this was great. Cool. And like I said, it brought me down the tube to some of my experiences that I'm like, why? How'd that happen? Excellent addition. Raconteur, what do you think?
Stupid trying to talk to me. I enjoyed this a lot, Hatter. And forgive me for not being able to go
okay.
through some of the love. But, you know, the melancholy so well, and the idea of a relationship being haunting. People take haunting in different. It doesn't have to be a physical,
oh, yeah.
like, know, I swear the keys were there, and then, you know, I went someplace else, and then when I went back to where I looked 2 minutes ago, there they were. You know, it doesn't have to be that, because there's like, you know, well, you know, oh, she always used to leave the light on. You know, so when you look at the bathroom and the lights are on, it's like that memory, that's what kind of haunts you, that idea is very powerful. I really enjoy that thought a lot. You know, that happens a lot. You know, it's something very tangible, as spooky and as eclectic as you could take it. You know, it's rooted in an idea that really does, you know, bury itself in your brain, deep in your brain, and it attaches itself to things like scents and smells too. Scents and smells. Yeah, listen to me. Sights and sounds and scents. You know, all different things. So, you know, when you say, you know, he was gone, he was there and then he was gone. It's like, you know, well, that's a literal thing. But then you know, you talk about other things that are like, you know, that had happened. That are like, you know, the memory of when he was there a minute ago, you know, this is what had happened. So yeah, this is great. It was a great piece.
Yeah, that's what happened to Mickey. Mickey kept getting touched. The
uh-huh.
drummer, he kept getting touched, and he split, and never came back. And then LaPhil, his was like you said, the keys weren't there a minute ago. And
yeah.
He comes out one night and said, "Did you bring a cold beer into my room?" I said, "No." He was sleeping. He woke up. And there was one on the thing, on the nightstand.
Someone
Richard
thought he did it.
Door. Yeah, and RTD was another story that he won't go totally into, so I don't quite know what happened. But I didn't tell these guys that it was haunted. They found out by themselves.
Yeah. Awesome piece, Hatter.
Awesome.
Hatter,
I'm so glad that you were able to make it.
I'm sorry?
I said the ghost never hurt anybody. Scared the shit out of my kids, too, but...
Yeah.
Never hurt anybody.
Well, and it's good to get scared when you're little and then you have something to talk about to your therapist. Just kidding! I'm just kidding. I just want to say my thank yous. I watched
this charge is double. It's once for you and once for the apparition.
Yeah, yeah. thank you to Rackentor, of course, for being my right hand man. Thank you, Deborah Lee, Sweet Pea, Hatter, and Edgar Allan Poe and Emily Dickinson, right, for putting in some poems. Calling in, you know, and sharing this topic with me. I really love this show. I really recommend you to watch it. It's on Netflix, so you have to get Netflix, but it's worth it. So the closeout music, like I said, I have one more clip left. That's going to be the end clip, and then I'm going to, and then you can kind of see what happens to the storyline. And then I'm going to go right into the closing music right after that, because it is 2 minutes of, we're going to go off air in 2 minutes. So anybody listening live, you're going to have to listen to the after show to finish listening. I'm sorry, we do cut off at in 2 minutes. But you can definitely listen to the after show for the ending. We are closing with a song by Carlene. And this is in her words, Music for Dreamers. I started writing and singing music as a hobby in 2010 and decided rather bravely to upload my stuff onto YouTube. And that's how I found her, and I absolutely love her, by the way, for a bit of a laugh. Little did I know, I'd gain such a gorgeous fan base of kindred nerds who understood and welcomed my word of music and encouraged me to make more. So that's what I've been doing. I've been happily building my little library of songs for over a decade now, still learning and loving the craft and still beaming diligently with every new cherished subscriber on YouTube. It's been an absolute joy and a privilege to do this full time, and I hope to do it for many more years. And thank you so much for your kindness and support. And then, like I said, that was a message from Carlene herself. And I have to say, I subscribe to her channel, and it's a great channel. She does covers, originals. There are just a few of them that I've just, I mean, I listen to a lot of YouTubers, but I think Carlene, Ashley, Serena, and one more that I'm panicking because I'm trying to rush. I can't think of her name at the moment, but I'm sure I will feature her. But there's like three of them that I listen to a lot. Arutan, who I opened with yesterday. So, yeah, check her out on YouTube, and we are closing with her song. And so we are off air, and anybody wants to stick around, you can listen to the ending. And here we go. Thank you. Thank you, guys. Hatter and Rack, thank you. I'm going to be closing
You're
out
welcome.
After the clip and the song, so thank you.
See you next time.
Thank you. All right, here we go. Where am I?
Funny. Sunny, it's okay. It's here. I only see you. I'm sorry. All the water. I didn't realize. It's okay. What was easy to clean up? I'm so tired. Me. I know. Like every day I feel myself fading away, but I'm still here. I don't even
You're
understand how that is.
Here. You're here.
It's like I see you in front of me. And I feel you touching me. And every day, we're living our lives, and I'm aware of that. And it's like I don't feel it all the way. I'm not even scared of her anymore. I just stare at her, and it's getting harder and harder to see me. Maybe I should just accept that and go.
No. No. Not yet.
Jamie, only if you can't feel anything, then I'll feel everything for the both of us. But no one is going anywhere. Okay? You're still here.
Pair knew the moment had come. The beast had lurked indeed, and the beast, at its hour, had sprung. and she could not risk the most important thing, her most important person, not for one more day. And so the gardener found herself back at Bly Manor one last time. For the rest of her days, the gardener would gaze into reflection, hoping to see her face, her own lady in the lake. She'd leave a door open at night, just a crack, should she ever come back. Waiting for her lover to return. Years would go by, and as she slept underneath the water, the au pair's memories would fade, like Viola before her. Like the children, she too would forget her past. She would know nothing of the gardener, nothing of their life together. The details, the specific moments, would all fade away. More time will pass, and the water will wash away the delicate features of her. Of her beautiful, perfect face. But she won't be hollow nor empty. And she won't pull others to her fate. She will merely walk the grounds of Bly, harmless as a dove, for all of her days, leaving the only trace of who she once was in the memory of the woman who loved her most.
Okay, I was going to play us out right away, but Rakentor texted me, and I just have to ensure him he's right. Yes, you figured it out. The person who's telling the story is the gardener. You're good. You have a good ear rack. So you're on mute, I think. I know you're awake because you just texted me. But
oh,
you
sorry,
are right.
Sorry.
No, Rakentor texted me, and so you figured it out. The gardener is the speaker, is the storyteller, but I don't know what Rak's doing over there, but he just he just messaged me that he figured it out. So I'm going to go into the playout music. Hatter, again, thank you so much. I'm so glad you were able to call in, and thank you. The closeout is only 2 minutes. I hope you enjoy it. The antique grave. Oh, you're here. Hey, Rak. Yeah, you got it. You got it, Rack. So you.
Oh yeah.
You,
yeah.
Now, did you get it really earlier? Or did you just get it now?
No, I had it earlier.
Were you going to say something else?
Just you know, I like things. It's not often that you know I get caught, you know, with that idea. You know, I keep an open mind when I watch things like that. So, it's like it hits me sometimes. It's in the way that they present it sometimes. It's like, oh, you know, they're hinting but not. But anyways.
Yes. Yeah, so they never say it, but it is implied at the very end that she, the one who started off telling the story, you figured out in the end she is the gardener, and they trick you because they pick two different actresses to play those two different roles, because the older woman is very older, I won't say very older, but they pick two different actresses in similar features and similar ways of speaking. When there, she's actually talking,
right.
But they kind of tricked you a little bit by doing
Journey
that. But I'm sorry.
Did you ever see a Journey Through Time? I think it's called. With,
I don't think so.
Christopher Reeves and the actress with two different color eyes.
Mm.
Oh.
No, I don't think I have.
At the beginning of the movie, she's represented by an old Anne Bancroft or somebody like that, I think it is. It's really interesting.
I'll check it out.
Through time.
Yeah, I'll check it out.
It's a chick flick, but it's a cool movie.
A chick flick. Well, I like chick flicks, so that's okay. I'm going to go check that out. I will check it out. And I was going to play the music right after, but I was so excited that Rack got it. And so I wanted to tell him. But okay, guys, I'm going to play out the playout music, and then I'm going to end the show. So thank you again.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
Always.
Night, Sky.
Night.
Sky. That goes on. You hear me?
I do.
See you next time.
I'll sit upon my grave and will dead lips speak. Why dost thou weep upon my grave and will not let me sleep? My breast is as cold as clay, my breath is earthly strong, and if you kiss my cold clay lips, your days they won't be long. How oft on yonder grave, where we were wont to walk, the fairest flower that e'er I saw has withered. All right, one last time. Here we go. Night rack.
Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio. Goodbye.